Okay, this is Erev Shavuos, Tavshin Ayin, okay? What we're going to do is talk about the Karban Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves of bread that were brought on the Mizbeach as a mincha on Shavuos. And we're going to ask a couple questions about that. And what we're when we look into the answer, we're going to start building, developing a little bit more what we spoke about last week. Remember we introduced the idea that tzchar is an expansion and opening up of the eyes, and we asked last week, why do we celebrate Shavuos as Zman Matan Torah Seinu, when in the end, that Torah that we were given at Shavuos, we really don't have that. We have the broken shards of the Luchos, but that revelation that we experienced was not something that endured in Klal Yisrael. It was too beyond them. They died at the time. Parcha nishmasam, their neshamas left them. It was overwhelming. It was getting a glimpse of something that they could not really absorb. And then they were revived, and then they heard the Torah from Moshe. And later in Yom Kippur, they received the second luchas, as we know, with the 13 midas harachamim. And so we said last week that the reason we celebrate Shavuos is because at that moment we experienced an opening of the eyes, the 50th Madrega, Kol 50, the Yam HaTorah, which is the 50. We got a glimpse at that moment of the concept of expansion, of seeing and understanding everything, which of course goes hand in hand with not having any Bechira, not really having free choice anymore. But we're going to develop that idea of the expansion further, because Selich Shavuos is very much, you know, that that pivotal moment in the history of Klal Yisrael that we are told never to forget, which we will go learn that pasuk. What's interesting is thinking about the Shtei Alechem and the Yontif of Shavuos and Zman Matan Torah Seinu and the combination of that all. That although the Torah talks about Shavuos in Parshas Pinchas and Parshas Emor and other places, it never, ever, as you well know, mentions anything about it as the day of Kabbalah Torah. Zero. Pesach we know. Yetzias Mitzrayim. Sukkos we know. We sat in Sukkos. We know what it's for. And we don't know. There is no mention outright in the Torah that we received the Torah on that day or that we're commemorating the receiving of the Torah that day. Everything that is mentioned about Shavuos has to do with the agricultural cycle. That 50 days after you start cutting down the barley, then you after you count 50 days from that point, then you have a holiday on which you bring two shtei halechem, two loaves of bread. The pasuk in Emor that tells us to bring the two loaves of bread 50 days later is chapter 23, Chaf Gimel, starting in pasuk 15, Emor, right before, a few parshas ago. This is what we read every yontiv, right? We always, go back to parshas Emor. Because Parshas Emor has, as we've learned here many times, the mitzvahs hayom, whereas Parshas Pinchas, remember what Parshas Pinchas tells us? And we always read it in Musaf, the karbanos hayom. Pinchas, in Parshas Pinchas we find the special karbanos of the day, in Parshas Emor we find the mitzvahs hayom. So for example, eating matzah, lulav and esrog, shtei alechem, are going to be the mitzvahs hayom, as opposed to the extra karbanos hayom that you'll find in Pinchas, right? That's the difference between them. So in Parshas Emor, we're told, "Safartem lachem imachor sashabbos," from the day after Pesach. We know how to translate that. "Miyom haviachem es omer hatnufa," when from the day you bring the carbon omer, which is the barley offering, the first when you start harvesting, you count 7 complete weeks. Sheva shabbosos tamimos tiyenos, 7 complete weeks. Ad mimorchas hashabbos hashavis, until the day after the last, that means the 50th, the day after the 49th day, 7 complete weeks. Tisperu chamishim yom, you count the weeks and you count the days. Remember we spoke about that last week? That each day, when you add another day, the group of days keeps expanding. We're counting weeks, but we're in the counting of the weeks is the notion that the group of the individual days is expanding. So you count the weeks, chamishim yom, 50 days. Vehikravtem mincha chadash, and then you bring a new mincha, which is in addition to the karbanos. Mimosh vosechem, from your settlements, you bring lechem, bread, to nufashtayim, bread to be waved, 2 of them. And shnei esronim solis tiena chametz, it will be chametz. This is when the only time Klal Yisrael brings a mincha of chametz. And it's a bikurim, it's something new for our Kaddish Baruch Hu. Okay, and you bring these two breads with other karbanos, which it'll then mention. So in Parshas Emor, we learn that you bring two loaves of bread, and the whole holiday of Shavuos is taught, is described as a agricultural day. It's 50 days after you bring the Korban Omer. It's not only is Kabbalah Satorah not mentioned. You know what's not mentioned? The day of the month. It never says on the sixth day of the month of Sivan, or on the sixth day of the third month. Never. Like every other holiday, the 15th day of the first month and the 10th day of the seventh month. It never says it. So here's a few things about Shavuos. It's not associated directly in Pshat with Kabbalah Satorah. It doesn't have a day. It doesn't have a particular day, birthday, date that it is celebrated on. It's 50 days after you start counting. So it's really the culmination of the counting. And the real secret of Shavuos is that the original Shavuos that the Jews celebrated in the Midbar was on what day? When was Kabbalah Satorah? Zion. We're not celebrating really the day they received the Torah. We're celebrating the 50th day from the Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what we're celebrating. We're celebrating when we finish counting 7 weeks. The completion of the 7 weeks is what we're celebrating. And we're not really celebrating. We're not on the day of Kabbalah Satorah. That's really the next day. We're celebrating that Klal Yisrael got to a state of the 50th. And the concept of two loaves of bread have a lot to do with that. And then Kabbalah Satorah follows. So what is this idea of bringing Shtei Halechem? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, and Daf Tes Zayin, that the reason you bring Shtei Halechem, and we have spoken about this in the past, a number of years ago, we're going to develop it. The reason you bring two loaves of bread on the Mizbeach, on Shavuos, which is the day of the 50th day that precedes Kabbalah Satorah, is because on this day, the Peiros Ha'ilan, the fruits of the trees, are being judged. Shavuos Nodin Al HaPeiros. On Shavuos, there's a judgment. It's Yom Hadin, Nodun Al HaPeiros. It's Rosh Hashanah for the Peiros. Therefore, you bring Shtei Halechem. Anybody have a problem with that? Okay. Lechem is not a fruit. Okay, so Rashi in the Gemara tells us what? Remember that? That originally Chita was a fruit. It grew on a tree, which means, like all fruits that grow on trees, yes, you get your crop each year, but the actual trunk does not die seasonally, like with a vegetable, or today with grain, which what wheat is today, a grain, means that it's really more of a vegetable, grows from the ground, and it dies every year, and needs to be replanted every single year. You don't plant your grain the next year, you won't have any. It's not like a fruit. In other words, what this is saying is there was a time where lechem, or rather chita, okay, wheat, was a fruit. And Shavuos makes us remember that time. Now, Shavuos meaning the 50th day of counting, okay, just separated from Kabbalah Satorah for a minute. On the 50th day of counting, we remember that the fruits of the trees are being judged, and in its perfect state, wheat is a fruit, and therefore wheat, the king of all fruits, the staple of life, is brought on the Mizbeach, because this is the day that Hashem is looking at the fruits. This notion that chita was a fruit, we feel, is telling us something. Okay? When was it a fruit? When did its nature change? It changed after the sin of Eitz Hadas. Some say that the Eitz Hadas was chita, was wheat. Don't forget that chita is often used to represent das. The Gemara says a baby doesn't know how to say ima and abba and doesn't have any das until it starts eating wheat. Wheat is associated with das. Often, okay, it's kind of like it's a trigger to when you see the Gemara making statements in their riddle form about chita, they're talking about a certain understanding, a certain development of das. So they say the Eitz Hadas was a chita, whatever the Eitz Hadas was. It was man's staple that changed in nature and it became like man, interestingly enough, not ongoing and alive continuously, but deathbound and finite, dying every single year. Isn't that what happened to man when they ate from the Eitz Hadas? Mm-hmm. So if chita was the Eitz Hadas, if bread represents this change in man, or is linked to the change of man. So bread, the nature of wheat, also undergoes a change, and it becomes finite, and it dies. But originally, chita was a tree, and it was supposed to be like a fruit, constantly replenished, constantly alive. So you would pick your, you know, you'd harvest your grain, but then there'd still be the, you know, the core, the keren, we call it. Just like man would bear fruit, but man would be infinite, and man would be eternal, and man would not die like the tree. Didn't we say the same thing? That's how man was before the sin. Never to die, to bear fruit in its season, like David HaMelech says in the first kapitel, Asher Pirio Yitain Beito, it'll give its fruit, but it won't die itself. It'll keep producing at the right time, but it will never die. And man changed. So Shavuos, we're talking about when the fall of man has a tikkun. There's a moment which this 50th day inspires us, reminds us, and gives us the koach to, for a minute, glimpse what it was like when man was also not death-bound, like wheat was not death-bound, when it lived forever. The term used by Chazal for a fruit or man or something that bears fruit but doesn't die itself is lo, this is a famous phrase, lo mechalia karna. Karna is the keren, the trunk of the tree. Keren kayemes, right? The main, the ever-existing root or core or you know, I won't call it foundation, but let's refer to it as the trunk of the tree. Mechalia comes from the word, you know, kilyon or destruction or end. No, there's no end to the keren. Lo mechalia karna. That's the phrase. It's the same as saying keren kayemes, that the keren is always existing and enduring, right? Man is obviously, as you well know, ki adam eitz hasadeh. Man is called the fruit of the tree, ki adam eitz hasadeh, right? Man in our perfect state, which we lost and not we did not regain till the moment of the 50th day, where we were then were prepared for Kabbalah Satorah. We did not regain that state of lo mechalya karna, of eternity, of a constant existence until Shavuos, until Kabbalah Satorah, which came after, as we said, the 50th, which is our preparation, our being able for a moment to experience that. So man went through 2,000 years, which are called 2,000 years of Tohu Vohu, being Mechalya Karna, yes, that the Keren died. We died. And then when we received the Torah, we grasped again once more the eternity of Lo Mechalya Karna. The Keren doesn't die. Yes, the body might die, but there's an internal Keren that will never die. Now, it's the same as saying, in another way, that at Har Sinai, at Kabbalah Satorah, the poison of the Nachash was neutralized, right? It's the same way of saying it. The Nachash brought down man. In other words, what another way of saying we were gripped and in the grip of our material, our physical, that which separates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 2,000 years of that until man could extract themselves from that, see the truth, see that their whole life and their whole purpose and their whole future is really in the sphere of Ruchnius, and all the spirit physical is used for the Ruchnius, and that's when the poison of the Nachash no longer infected them, right? Same type of thing. How did man become once more lo mechalya karna, that the keren doesn't die, that there's a sense of eternity? It was that glimpse of the expansion of the truth. That is the same concept. So when we say that man is eitz hasadeh, okay, we have a lot of analogies to a man and tree, and Torah being that tree that man is holding on to. Right, so we say Eitz Chayim Hi L'Machazikim Ba. It's a tree of life. If man is a tree, and the Torah is a tree of life, and we hold on to the Torah, which is eternally alive, we're holding on to something like a tree that never dies. We also say way back in the beginning, before the sin, in the second perek, the Eitz HaChayim B'Soch Hagan. The Eitz HaChayim was already planted in the middle of the garden. What's the garden that we're talking about? Then the garden we're talking about is not the, or you know, we in, you know, beyond the image of a garden, a physical garden. The Eitz HaChayim B'Soch HaGan is the Gan is the person. The gan is the person, and all that grows from the person are the fruits of that gan. And in the middle of every person, they're inside, invested in every person, is an Eitz HaChayim. Okay? Is the tree of life. And man is one. Is a man could be hold. You know, has an opportunity to hold on to the tree of life, and then man could become eternal. It took 2,000 years for man to hold on tight to the Eitz HaChayim B'Soch HaGan that was already within them, because what we're saying here is when their eyes were opened up, when they expanded and saw. In other words, when they once more understood that humanity, physical people, are not just finite, but they have a way to attach to eternity and be like the chita, which was once a tree, eternal. They understood that that possibility was already in them. Okay? Let's go back to the famous Chazal, that when Hashem wanted to give the Torah to the nations, right? He went to all the various nations. Now, how do we make heads or sense of this, okay? He went to Esav, and he said, do you want to have the Torah? And Esav said, well, you know, we're not going to say Nasev and Ishma. We're not crazy. Let's hear first. Let's hear what's in it. He said, well, you can't kill, and you can't steal, right? Esav says, you can't steal. So he said, no, that's not for us, right? We don't want it. So then they went to Yishmael, we're not impulsive, what's in it? You can't kill. No, that's not for us, right? And Hashem went to all the nations, and everybody said, oh, no, we can't do that. So then he came to Klal Yishmael, and we didn't even ask what was in it. We said, Nasa v'nishma. A few basic questions. Isn't that impulsive? Isn't that a little, you know, risky? And did we said Nasa v'nishma, but then we went ahead to like violate almost everything in the Torah. So we were very, as a nation over the years, like pretty much everything at some point is violated. So when we said Nasa v'nishma, we were just being like reckless. Maybe the Goyim were being more circumspect and, you know, understood it. And by the way, here's a much, much more, you know, a bothersome question. If Hashem said, you want it? And they said, no, it says don't kill. We don't want it. Don't steal. So we don't want it. Don't commit adultery. No, we don't want it. But they're chayav in those things anyway. V'shev v'mitzvos b'nei Noach. They didn't get out of anything. So what was the offer and what was the rejection? So that is dealing with the topic we just started. That when their eyes were opened on Shavuos, when we got a glimpse, an expansion, and we saw everything, Einod Milvado, we also understood something else. That we already knew it. It was already B'soch HaGan. It was already alive within us. It came from inside. It wasn't just an awareness of outside now, new information. We began for the first time to feel that it lived anyway within us. We just had to see it. That's what David HaMelech, who is born on Shavuos. By the way, David HaMelech doesn't have a birthday like Moshe Zayin Adar. He's born 50 days after the Karban HaOmer on Shavuos. Okay? David HaMelech is born on this 50th day. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, right? So Rascha, your Torah, the Soch Mei'ai, it's already within me, in my innards. It's coming from the inside out. It's the Eitz HaChayim that's already B'Soch HaGan. It's already inside. But Hashem had to open their eyes to make them realize that it was already inside. How does that work? But David HaMelech, first and foremost, is the representative of the human being that can't survive without his connection to Torah. That all is Achash Alti Me'es Hashem, etc. We're not, you know, we know a lot about David HaMelech. It's his life's blood. Dalid Vav Dalid, you know what that represents? Dalid is a Dal, a pauper. On both sides, he feels helpless. With nothing other than Vav. Vav is the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was David. That's what David represents, right? But what we saw is what we experienced on Shavuos. What Hashem was offering the nations, okay, was not new mitzvahs that they were not already chayav in. What Hashem was offering the nations was that the Torah should become for them so much a part of them, in their psyche, in their heart, in their minds, in every fiber of their beings, that they can't escape it, that it's B'Soch Mei'ai, it's in my gut. And they said, no, we'll keep the mitzvahs, you know, but we don't want our nature, you know, if we keep the mitzvahs, but okay, even let's say we keep the mitzvahs, but what we don't want is Torah embedded into us so that it becomes our nature to want to keep these mitzvahs. That we give up our real interests and our real pursuits and our real yetzaharas, and we're only devoted, and like David HaMelech, to these goals. That's not what we want. So even if you compel us to keep the mitzvahs, okay, but we don't want the Torah, meaning the Torah that Klal Yisrael accepted. Not that we would guarantee Hashem forever that we would keep all the mitzvahs, because we couldn't. So, and it wasn't that we were impulsive and said, all right, give it to us, and reckless, you know, whatever it is. What we accepted, my grandfather brings this down, what we accepted on Shavuos is that Hashem will implant, we will feel that the Eitz HaChaim, the eternal Eitz HaChaim, is already in us and will want to hold on to it. That it becomes so, we understand that it's so internalized that we are in pain when we ignore it, or we're blind to it, or we try to escape from it. It causes us a tremendous amount of pain. So from here we go into a few psukim. When it's when in the Medrash and Shir HaShirim says on it's talking about the first pasuk, right? The first pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Yishakeni Meneshikos Pihu, let Hashem, talking about the Klal Yisrael to Hashem, kiss me with the kisses of his lips again. What this first pasuk in Shir HaShirim is talking about is we once experienced Hashem speaking to us, so to speak, kissing us mouth to mouth, peh el peh. That was Har Sinai, when Hashem spoke directly to Klal Yisrael. And we are hoping, we are wishing for that experience one more time, that we'll have an opportunity for Hashem to reveal himself to us the way he did originally at Har Sinai, which is like that degree of intimacy, mouth to mouth, directly. So here, the Medrash says here, B'sha'a she'shamu Yisrael, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, at the moment they heard the first Dibra, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, Nitka Talmud Torah Belibam. What happened was, it was implanted, it was established, the desire to learn Torah in their hearts. When Hashem said Anochi, Chazal tell us that represents all mitzvahs aseh. See, that's a positive. I am Hashem, to serve me, right? That includes every mitzvah sase, everything you have to do to serve Hashem. Specifically, to Anochi Hashem is to know Hashem, who is now saying, I am Hashem, to get to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to explore that further, to delve into that. And that means at that moment, Hashem implanted into the hearts and minds of Klal Yisrael a great love for Talmud Torah. That was it. After that point, you could not separate Klal Yisrael from their Torah. Period. End of story. Okay? B'shah she'shama Yisrael lo yiyelecha, when Klal Yisrael heard lo yiyelecha lehim acherim, that incorporated all the mitzvahs lo sase. Don't have any other gods. Do not serve anything other than me. That's the ultimate negative commandment. Serve nothing but a Kadosh Baruch Hu. All things that are forbidden fall under this category. At that moment, nekar melibam, it was uprooted from their heart, uprooted like a tree, ripped out the yetzer hara. Now, at that moment, that's what happened. Now, that moment was just a moment, right? Then Hashem receded, so to speak, and real life began again. But the moment of the Giloy Shechin of Har Sinai, this enormous love for Torah was implanted in us, and this total removal, a complete uprooting and discarding completely of the Yetzer Hara was also experienced by Klal Yisrael, which is another way of saying no more Bechira, which was another way of saying the mountain was over their head, which is another way of saying that their minds expanded and they saw everything, and then there's only one Yetzer. There's only one Yetzer. There's only one Yetzer Atov. That's all it is. That was the moment of Har Sinai. And then Klal Yisrael at that moment from within themselves understood that it wasn't that Hashem was commanding them to keep the Torah and keep the mitzvahs and accept these mitzvahs forever after for them and their children and grandchildren for the rest of history. They had no options. From that point on, Klal Yisrael had a deep understanding there was no option. It was their craving because they got a glimpse of everything. Now, that concept, that there is no option, has a word, a Hebrew word that we use to describe that. It's called muchrach. It's compelled from within ourselves. Our knowledge, our bond, our understanding compels us. We are utterly compelled from within ourselves. The experience of Shavuos, yes, we lost those luchos, and they were shattered, and that experience was way too overwhelming. But one thing remained with Klal Yisrael, with the core of Klal Yisrael. What remained with Klal Yisrael was that there is a sense in us that the Torah is not something we're obligated to do. It's something we ourselves know from within ourselves we're compelled, and I don't mean forced to do. We can't stop ourselves from wanting to be attached to the Torah. We can't help ourselves. It's part of the way we think and the way we feel. It's in our blood. The compulsion comes from inside. We sense the Eitz HaChayim B'Soch HaGan. We sense the state of knowing absolutely that this is the only emes. Yes, that revelation was too much. But that experience stayed with Klal Yisrael till this moment, and that's what we're trying to get a taste of on the Yontav of Shavuos. That we got to a Madrego where our eyes were opened, we reached the 50th, we saw. At that moment, we only had one desire, and it came from inside ourselves. And it made us eternal and totally connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's another way of saying that chita, wheat, which for so long was denigrated and became a fruit, a finite, death-bound thing, which is really compared to man, something that was Mechal Yekarna, that its trunk, did die every year. There was death in the world, death, spiritual death, because people were not attached to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. There was not a force in the world like Klal Yisrael to teach the world and to exist in the world that you can be a human, a physical, material person here, attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and living forever.
Which moment?
The moment of Kabbalah Satorah, the Giloy Shechina. And then it was experienced once more in the world, the concept of Lo Mechal Yekarna. Yes, people will not stop dying after Kabbalah Satorah. But if the physical body dies, the mind exists, and our das exists, and begins to expand and expand and expand and live eternally and understand things we could never understand for. And because that is the end, we feel it right here now, and we feel from within ourselves an enormous craving, a desire, a compulsion to be attached to that. That's what's causing us here not to die, Al Kiddush Hashem, to want to be able to follow the mitzvahs, to be hungry for it. That's what's causing it, because that's what's going to happen later. It has an effect down here, and we understood that on Shavuos. Now, I found this thing here in Arya Kaplan, If You Were God. This is such a great little book. It is I gave it out to my kids for a mitzvah, because there's so much chachman here. So he describes this expansion in a very interesting way. The expansion we started to talk about, what we experienced on Shavuos, right? That the Torah is we felt it in ourselves, because that ultimate future that we got a glimpse of, that ultimate knowledge, that ultimate, what Rambam calls, remember, it brings the Chazal, not Rambam, the crowns on our heads being Nene Miziv Ashchina, that's the inevitability, that's the future, and it's changing us here. He explains that scientifically, this there's a scientific basis and origin for this. He says Henry Bergson, I guess is a researcher, has suggested that, although we think, by the way, that the brain is a thinking machine, right? It's actually a very inefficient device as a thinking machine. Henry Bergson has suggested that one of the main functions of the brain is actually to eliminate activity and awareness rather than produce it. Here. Aldous Huxley quotes Professor C.D. Broad's comments on this. He says that every person is capable of remembering everything that has ever happened to him. He is able to perceive everything that surrounds him. However, if all this information poured into our minds at once, it would overwhelm us. So the function of the brain and nervous system is to protect us and prevent us from being overwhelmed and confused by the vast amounts of information that impinges upon our sense organs. So they shut out most of what we perceive and remember. All that would confound us is eliminated, and only the small special selection that is useful is allowed to remain. So he goes on to say that Huxley explains that our mind has powers of perception and concentration that we cannot even begin to imagine, but we need to survive at all costs. To make survival possible, the mind of man funnels everything through a reducing valve called the brain, filters tons of filters, and what that does is it only allows certain stimuli in so we can concentrate on one thing at one time or we'd be bombarded, right? They say that this, he says here, this static, okay, these filters that block out all the stimuli so we can focus on one thing, which actually limits our ability to see everything, can actually be seen. He said, when you close your eyes, you see all sorts of random pictures flashing through your mind. It is impossible to concentrate on any one of them for more than an instant, and each image is obscured by a host of others superimposed upon it. That's the static of your brain blocking everything out. Then he goes on to say that much of what we know about this static is actually a result of the research done on drugs that eliminate it. Okay? That's how psychedelic drugs work. They remove some of the static, okay? Now he says like this. Imagine the mental activity of a neshama, which we always associate with the mind, okay? Standing, so to speak, naked before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no more filters, no more static. The reducing valve is gone entirely. The mind is open and transparent. Things can be perceived in a way that was impossible to a mind held back by a body and a nervous system. The visions and understanding are the most delightful bliss imaginable, saying what we've said in just with a different twist. And he quotes the same Gemara, that the tzaddikim are sitting with their crowns on their heads, delighting in the Shekhinah. This is what Eov meant when he said, he quotes a pasuk, and after my skin is destroyed, then without my flesh, I will see Hashem. But then, an individual will also see himself in a new light. Every thought and memory will be lucid, and he will see himself for the first time without the static, jamming, that shuts out most thoughts. Imagine standing before Hashem with your memory wide open. You will remember everything you did and see it in a new light. You will see it in the light of the unshaded spirit. You will see it in God's own light that shines from one end of creation to the other. That's what they saw at Har Sinai. That's the expansion. The memory of every good deed and mitzvah will be the sublimest of pleasures, as our tradition speaks of Olam Haba. Then he speaks about the negative, the opposite also, the memory of the memory of Chasam, the bad things. But what he's explaining here is that the mind begins to receive messages from all over the world, from all over the Bria. Not just the physical Bria, from the spiritual Bria, from the upper spheres, it all comes flooding in slowly. There's an orientation process, by the way. There's an orientation process. That's why the Yom HaDin takes 30 days. That's why many people don't go to the Kever for 30 days, because the Neshama is orienting to a whole new world. But this is how he describes what happens, this expansion, which hopefully will be for us all Schar and all bliss and all what we call Gan Eden and all pleasure. But that's what they experienced. And when they saw that all, that changed them and changed us, because everyone's neshamas were there somehow or another. And that created in us a reality that we crave to finally exist in that state. And that craving inside of us is something that we can't control and we can't turn off and we can't shut down. And that is why here, that is very interesting. Rambam, it has a minyan ha-mitzvahs. You know, he counts the mitzvahs. In every single mitzvah, other than the first two, which is Anochi and Lo Yelecha, the lashon Rambam uses is that it's a mitzvah shetzivanu. The mitzvah gimel shetzivanu, the third mitzvah that he commanded us is this. Mitzvah dalet shetzivanu, the mitzvah that he commanded is this. However, when it comes to Anochi Hashem Elokecha, he says, or mitzvah beis, lo yelecha, he says, mitzvah beis, now listen to the lashon of the Rambam, mitzvah beis, not shetzivanu, hatzivoy shetzivanu, bahamanos hayachad, we have to trust, believe in that Hashem is one, let's say, okay? So here, mitzvah beis he, hatzivoy shetzivanu, he adds a word, hatzivoy shetzivanu. What's the difference between saying mitzvah gimel tzivanu, you know, he commands us this, mitzvah beis hatzivoy shetzivanu. What Rambam is implying is it's already a command. And then he commanded it. How is it already a command? It already existed as a command, and then he commanded it to us. When Rambam is saying it, the mitzvah is the tzivoy, the command, that he commanded us. When Rambam is saying it already existed as a command, Rambam is using the same idea we introduced. It's muchrach. It's commanded. It already within us is a command. We have no choice. It drives us. It compels us. We find that it is how we what we want anyway. It exists already as a tzivoy before Hashem had to actually go and state that we're obligated. The command is a self-starting, natural, visceral command that we respond to. Right? It's like the brain wants us to eat. That's a form of a command upon us, right? So also this desire that we have is already a command. Now, I want you to all look. You have Chumash in front of you. Turn to Devarim. Turn to Devarim, Perek Dalet, and these Chumashim, I'll tell you in a second, it's on page 960. Let's read these Pesukim, okay? Tes and Yud. Okay. Here, Tes and Yud. Pasuk Tes says, here, this is in Eschanan, right? Which also the Dibros are repeated in Eschanan. Here, this is the mitzvah. We have to fulfill this mitzvah, certainly on Shavuos, but it's for every single day of the year. This is a mitzvah. It's Aseh. Look at the mitzvah. Rak hi shomer lecha, watch yourselves. Okay, maybe it's, I'm sorry, I shouldn't take the Aseh. Maybe it's counted as a Los Aseh. Rak hi shomer lecha, watch yourselves. Ushmar nafshecha, and watch your souls. Okay, me'od, be very careful. Okay, pen tishkach, lest you forget. Es hadvarim, asher ra'u einecha, that your eyes have seen. You're not allowed to forget what you saw. Okay, upen, we're talking about Har Sinai. Pen yasuru milavavcha. Kol yimechayecha, you must not let it stray from your heart all the days of your life. V'hodatem levanecha, and you must make it known to your children. U'bnei banecha, that your children's children. What is this that we're referring to? You may not forget, and you must hold on to it tightly. Yom asher amadata lefnei Hashem elokecha b'chorev. The day you stood in front of Hashem in Chorev. Be'amor Hashem elai. When Hashem said to me, gather hekal yisha'am. Ashmiyim estivare, and I will let them hear my words. Asher yulmedun, they will be taught. We will teach them the yerosi kol hayamim, to fear me all the days. Asher hem chayim al hadama, that they are living on this earth. Vespenehim yilamdun, and they shall teach it to their children. And you can keep reading later if you want. But we are told, we are not allowed to forget what we experience. Is it possible to forget this even though it's deeply embedded in us? Of course you can forget it. You can drown it out. It was deeply embedded in Adam and Chava. And for 2,000 years it was buried. It was covered. The humanity did not feel what was already inside of them. It took Avraham, Sarah, and the Avos, the Imos, to bring it back out. And it took Klal Yisrael standing in front of Har Sinai to experience that it was already within us. And David HaMelech is the epitome of the one that felt it and brought that feeling to all of us. But make no mistake about it. That feeling exists in every single human being. Interestingly, on a small level, did anyone see the New York Times Magazine article about the babies this Sunday? Okay. They did experiments, very controlled experiments, very, very controlled, all kinds of factors, you know, that could interfere with the legitimacy of the results were taken into account. And they tested six-month-old babies, okay? Interesting. Not about sophisticated notions of God, but six-month-old babies about the notion of good and bad, right and wrong. Because no one ever felt that that was embedded in people, a natural desire to love what's good and see good in, you know, and understand intuitively what's good and what's bad. So they did some type of experiment with animation or with actual figures. I don't remember exactly, but there was like, let's say, a yellow circle, a red triangle, and a green square. And let's say the red, triangle was trying to get up a hill, and the yellow circle came behind it and like pushed it up the hill, and then the green square came and pushed it down the hill. And then they put these three figures in front of six-month-old babies. They would hit the green square. They would be angry at the green square, or they would choose to play with the yellow or the red. In other words, they understood.
That's the good one.
They understood a basic sense of chesed, of good, of right, of wrong. Six-month-old babies, and they did this study in many different ways, and they did it with one-year-olds, a little bit more sophisticated. There is in every person an Eitz HaChaim B'soch HaGan. Unfortunately, sometimes by 4 or 5 years old, it's just chopped down, it's hatcheted. I'm not talking about our kids, I'm telling you. Forget it. Our kids are good compared to Nebuch, what other children go through and what other children have to endure is outside of our very, Baruch Hashem, for the most part, protected world. The children suffered enormously, and adults too. But what we're saying is, make no mistake about it, the Eitz HaChaim is already B'soch HaGan. We are lucky enough to know it and to feel it. And the more we learn Torah and open our minds to it, the more we feel it growing within us, and we are attached to it, and we want to, it becomes our desire. It's what we want. It's what we know is our, you know, gives us the only sense of real fulfillment that we have. So Shavuos, to pull it back together, Shavuos is the result of our getting to a Madrega, right, or being rather gifted with a glimpse of a world of what is described as pure Tov. Pure Tov, pure truth. And then learning that that world already is alive in us, and it's what's driving us. And then never forgetting and not becoming blind and deaf to it refusing or forgetting to teach it to our children, so that they grow up without a knowledge that there's an Eitz HaChaim within them. You know, if you tell someone what they already have and then they recognize it, they can begin to work with it. But you have to tell them that it's already there. And the main concept here is that man can become, in this finite world that we live in, eternal, connected to that eternity, as long as we know that it's not something, like the Torah goes on to say later in Devarim, it's not far away from you, it's not across the ocean, it's not up in the heavens. Kibaficha, bilvavcha, asoso. It is already in your heart, it's already in your mouth, it is there already. That's what we have to recognize. It's not something you have to bring to a person, you just have to make them recognize. That's called hakara, that they already own it. Yeah.
It's interesting. Everything that you said really points out to the reason why the only chag that we bring chametz, the two lechem, are the only time in the whole year that we could bring chametz to the Beis HaMikdash, because chametz is the sign, the lechem is the sign of our gaiva, that we are on a higher level, that we have, that we have this chametz, and usually we don't have chametz, we bring matzah, but this time we're bringing the lechem. This shows that this one time a year we are on a higher level and can bring chametz.
For sure. By the way, I remember also, just like on a lahavdil. I once saw a Garfield poster that showed the cat was a dog was up a tree. And it says, it's amazing what one can do when one doesn't know what one can't do. Right? Yeah.
It's something like this book called Other West Helms. And it was this professional West Helm that just wrote a book. And he's a black professional. And he found out at some point that someone was being arrested for murder. Of West Helms in the same neighborhood as he. So he went ahead and he followed up with this guy who was put in jail to find out what he was like. And he wrote a book saying that basically we're all basically the same. And it could have gone either way. But it has to do with what happens to you, but we're innately the good. And the expectations also is the other part. And going back to the mukhlas also is a level of expectations. We set the expectation that we have to be there and we have to get there.
For sure we have to set expectations, but what's very painful in the world is when a human being feels that they're destined for something great, that there's greatness within them, and they don't know and they don't have an address for it. Nobody tells them what they're supposed to do with their sense of, you know, of purpose and their sense of their quest for meaning. What do you do with it? And no one tells them. And everyone says, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but there is nothing out there that's really absolutely true or really meaningful. It's all just what you want to pretend, you know, so you can feel good. People have a sense of it, and unfortunately, they even ask the questions sometimes, Nebuch, and get and they don't get the right answers, and then they don't know what to do with themselves. So a lot of time is spent distracting themselves from the pain of not having the answers to the questions. We are so lucky that we know what's driving us, and we have a way to express it. Okay, everybody. Have a wonderful Shavuos. A good Yom Tov. Oh, wait, guys. Before you go, this Sunday, Amir Tashem, is the shul dinner.